It felt like the world stopped Tuesday when news broke that Tiger Woods was in a serious car accident, this time near Los Angeles. Today, Ramona Shelburne, who was reporting from the scene, brings us the very latest. And then we replay our conversation with documentarian Lauren Stoll, who dives into her recent film, Tiger Woods, America's Son, and why Tiger continues to mean so much to so many. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, February 24th. This is ESPN Daily. Alrighty, 3, 2, 1. Ramona Shelburne, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Oh, I wish I wasn't, Pablo.
So, Ramona, you have just spent many hours right outside the hospital where Tiger Woods is being treated. What was the scene like where you were today?
You know, it's weird. You go stand outside a hospital in the middle of a pandemic. there's a lot of stuff going on, right? And there's a lot of news trucks. There's helicopters everywhere, you know, but mostly news helicopters, right? And a lot of reporters. But you know, I was out front of the hospital, but I was mostly just working the phones all day. And it's, you know, it's pretty sickening, Pablo. I mean, it's just, you know, as a reporter, you go and you cover something like this, and each one of them kind of hits you, right? Because it speaks to the fragility of it. I'll tell you, you know, one man who's a local, he said, you know, he knows somebody who died on that road in that same spot, you know, similar area, when a coyote jumped out in front of their car and he swerved, and it was just a really dangerous patch of road.
So, Ramona, I want to timestamp this for the listener right now because it is 10:21 p.m. Eastern time. It is therefore 7:21 p.m. out where you are in L.A. What's the latest right now? What's the latest information that you've received from authorities, from medical sources, from anyone from Tiger's camp?
Well, you know, Tiger's camp's not talking a lot more than the initial statement. What my understanding was is that he had some of his camp was with him. And when I was there at the hospital just an hour ago, which would have been about 6 o'clock, I think, is when I left Pacific time. My understanding is he was still there. He was either still in surgery or just finished. You know, it's kind of hard to get a minute by minute. There's nobody coming outside to update the reporters. You kind of have to, you know, be working the phones to get information. You know, they, you know, the people I had spoken to said the most important thing is that you stabilize these injuries, and you wouldn't want to move somebody to another hospital. That would if they moved him, they'd probably move him to UCLA Westwood, which is another world-class hospital, and that's probably a little easier to control the scene there. You probably get a private room there. You could probably, if he's going to be there for a long time, And I think this is going to be a lengthy stay in the hospital. This is the kind of thing that you've got to take your time and you want to be comfortable. And it's probably going to be multiple surgeries. So to me, this is going to be unfolding over the next few days and weeks, not hours.
So on those surgeries and about what's required here, it has been reported, Ramona, that there's a compound leg fracture, a shattered ankle. But what do you know? What's the latest about Tiger's medical status? How serious is all of this?
He basically had crush injuries. That's the way you put it. You look at the car, okay? The car's crushed, the front of the car. So his legs were in the front of the car. One of them is basically a shattered ankle. It's your talus bone. The other is a compound fracture of the fibula and tibula, and tibia, sorry. That's your shin bone, basically. But there's also a vascular component, and that's your circulation. That's just your blood vessels that have been really severely impacted, the nerves. That's actually a little more dangerous even. Okay, that's the more dangerous part of this, of these injuries, that they have to stabilize first before they ever even think about, okay, let's get him walking or anything like that. You just, You've got to get him stable. It's a very dangerous thing. And then there's issues with post-operative complications of these things like this. If it's, you know, if that was actually open, I don't know if it was open. I've heard that, but we'll wait for the official medical on that. But if it was open, there's infection issues, there's blood clot risk, there's a lot of post-operative conditions that you'd have to look at and work on. And I think that's, you know, everybody I've talked to, whether it's, you know, in the golf world, the medical world, the just in LA, you know, because everybody in LA is talking about this today. It's all just concerned for Tiger Woods, the man, not Tiger Woods, the golfer.
As for the man, I mean, when the footage was shown of that car and how crushed it was, I mean, the first concern was for Tiger's life. That seems to no longer be the concern, which is a welcome update. But describe for me how the crash happened. What happened on that road going back to earlier today?
Tiger Woods was out here in California. He had a back surgery right before Christmas. So he's, let's see if you and I can do math. What, 6 weeks after surgery? Is that right? 6-7 weeks? He was in a video with Dwayne Wade that was on social media yesterday. He was at a shoot it was Golf TV that it's, he was there with Dwayne Wade.
So I told you I was about to do something amazing today, and I got an opportunity. I say the GOAT, he's not comfortable with it, but an opportunity to come out here with this guy right here, man. Got Tiger, thank you for teaching me something.
Justin Herbert, some other Hollywood people were on set, and he was staying at the Tirania Resort. My information, he was driving back to the set. He was driving back to the course where they were going to be shooting. It's not a long drive. You know, he was driving in, he's driving by himself in the car that was provided to him. It wasn't his car. Look, I just went through a very similar back surgery. I'm not driving yet. I theoretically could probably go about, I could drive myself if I had to, but, and I wouldn't want to go any further than, you know, 10, 15 minutes. It doesn't seem to me out of the ordinary that he would be driving himself, especially 6-7 weeks afterwards. He'd probably be cleared to do that in some light things. Yeah, he was driving himself back to the set, back to the course. And down that stretch of road, it's a very dangerous stretch of road. It is windy. There's a hill. People get going fast. And I keep thinking about when I see where it happened is they say he hit the median, and there was no, you know, you heard the press conference that the sheriff's department gave.
Today at 7:12 in the morning, Lomita Sheriff's Station received a call of a solo vehicle collision in Hawthorne Boulevard, north of Palos Verdes Drive. We arrived on scene at 7:18 a.m. and discovered a solo vehicle collision, and the sole occupant was, again, Tiger Woods. And deputies, at the time, they did not see any evidence of impairment, anything that of concern.
Obviously, the thing that stood out to me, there weren't any skid marks. Like, in other words, he didn't break. This wasn't like he swerved or he didn't break, or he saw something and he broke really hard and flipped. It was going around the curve, and you could very easily hit the median. And there's a lot of accidents there. And the locals that I talked to said, you know, everybody has a story about somebody they know who got in a crash there. And they're pretty serious crashes. I mean, he hit the median and his car is 700 feet down the road. It's a pretty high rate of speed, and it's a pretty long way to go after you hit the median.
We had heard, Ramona, from the LA Sheriff's Department and the responding officer, Carlos Gonzalez, that at the scene, Tiger was responsive, that he did not show signs of impairment.
When I arrived on the scene, Mr. Woods was seated in the driver's seat. I made contact with him, and I ensured that he was able to speak to me. At that time, he seemed that as though he was still calm and lucid. I made the determination that it would be safer to wait for LA County Fire to help remove him instead of trying to remove him myself. I kept Mr. Woods calm until LA County Fire arrived on scene. I asked him what his name was. He told me his name was Tiger, and at that moment, I immediately recognized him. I asked him if he knew where he was, what time of day, just to make sure he was oriented. He seemed as though he was lucid and calm.
What did you hear in that press conference with law enforcement that stuck out to you?
You know, the responding officer was incredible, wasn't it? I was just like riveted to his eyewitness account of you know, he was able to respond to me, and he said, you know, I was trying to keep him calm, and he said to Tiger, you know, it's better if when we wait for the fire department to get you out instead of having me try to get you out right now. And he kept him calm, you know, I kept him calm until he could get out. I mean, that was like riveting, right, to think about it. And I, the other part too is just, you know, they had to, like in that, I thought they were really good, because there's a lot of speculation, right? I mean, this isn't the first time Tiger's had a car accident. And the last time there was, you know, a lot there. And it's really easy for people to speculate and go, oh, he had a back surgery. Was he, you know, was there some kind of, you know, painkillers or whatever? It's
well, that's the next question, yeah. Ramona. That's where the internet went immediately, of course. So where are we on that? Yeah.
Yeah. You know where I am? I'm being a responsible journalist. Okay. I'm waiting. We have to trust the authorities on that one. I'm sure they're investigating that. I think the most immediate concern in the field is always just to stabilize the person, you know, after all the rehab and surgeries and the long road ahead, that he can get back and be in the dad, and Tiger Woods the man.
The day starts with questions about Tiger's life. I guess we end now with just a blunt question about his career. How worried are you, given what you know about the state that Tiger Woods is in, that we'll ever see him play golf again?
Tiger's made it back from four of these, and one of those surgeries was a spinal fusion. I went back and I was reading through some of Wright Thompson's incredible story on Tiger a few years ago. There's the knee injuries, the other surgery. I mean, he's made it back from a lot of things that would have ended a lot of other people's careers. I'm not going to say this ends his career, but it certainly could. I mean, it's, you know, if you listen to the doctors and the orthopedic doctors, like, I, you know, Alex Smith made it back from something like this, but this isn't just one leg, it's both legs. And I think right now, like, I in my head, I'm thinking about him as Tiger the man. I don't know that he'll golf at that level again, with these kind of serious injuries, but he's done some pretty incredible things in his career, so I'm not going to go all the way there yet. Right now, when somebody's hurt, all you care about is that they're okay.
Ramona Shelburne, thank you for making some time for us at the end of your day. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Pablo.
All right, after the break, our conversation with ESPN's Lauren Stoll, the director of Tiger Woods, America's Son.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Lauren Stoll began working on the Undefeateds documentary, Tiger Woods, America's Son, which is up now on ESPN+. Several years before Woods won the 2019 Masters. Stoll explores the history and context of race in golf in this film and Tiger's role as a singular black superstar in the sport.
Since I'm black, I might be even bigger than Jack Nicklaus. I might be even bigger than him to the blacks. I may be sort of like a Michael Jordan in basketball.
There are lots of long-form stories and documentaries about Tiger, to be clear about that, but you're telling a different story here. What did you want to actually tell America about Tiger Woods?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we hoped was really to approach it and to present Tiger and Tiger Mania, you know, that took place in the 90s and, you know, his epic kind of rise, you know, to that win at Augusta in 1997, making history and looking at that through, you know, the prism of race, you know, and culture in America.
So how and when did you begin reporting this whole project? When did you begin researching all of this?
We began researching in 2016, and our hope was to do a 20th anniversary Black History Month piece in honor of his 1997 win. And we were in production really for most of the end of 2016 into 17.
So just to be clear about the timeline here, you started this before Tiger won the Masters again.
Yeah. So at that time, it was really unclear what Tiger's future in golf would be. You know, I remember we went down to the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas and followed him around and, you know, shot his press conference and just the whole experience. That was his official kind of return to golf.
Waited for years. Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. The return to glory.
It's just been incredible to watch, you know, to see him win again in 2019. We had no idea what would take place over those 3 to 4 years between starting this project to where it is now.
Yeah, that's so crazy. But I want to zoom out for a second here, Lauren, because you play golf, you know the game, you're a fan of the game. How would you describe your understanding of the culture and history of golf?
Personally, for me, I did not fully understand the history of golf as it was for African Americans. You know, I would go out to the golf course with my dad, and I knew that I didn't see anyone who looked like me. I still don't really see many Black women, you know, on the golf course. So what was really impactful for me was the time that I spent with Pete McDaniel, a longtime, you know, Golf Digest writer, but he's also a golf historian. And really the history that he imparted and the wisdom of the game and what African Americans went through was just, I mean, fascinating.
I've written dozens and dozens of pieces about the inequality that we have in our profession, in the golf industry. You talk about a little Black golf history. I call it a war because that's what it is. That's the history of the Black man in this sport. It is disheartening at best. It is evil at worst.
You tell the story of that larger history through the history of Tiger, and it's worth refreshing people's memories here because Tiger was a very known commodity before he ever went pro. In your film, we see him as a child, and it's striking to see him as a child on the Today Show and these other huge television programs.
So right now, I'd like you to meet Tiger Woods and his father, Earl Woods.
What did he say about the Masters when he was younger, and what's it like to look back at that now?
That clip that you're specifically talking about, he was 14 years old and a reporter came up to him and, you know, interviewed him about various, you know, golf related questions and asked him, what is the one tournament that captures your imagination?
The Masters.
Why is that?
The way the Blacks have been treated there, you know, they shouldn't be there. And if I win that tournament, it'll be really big for us.
And that interview clip for me, when I found that, I just said, this is incredible. I never knew he said this. You know, and saying that there are still golf courses that I am now not allowed to play in. In my time speaking with Gary Smith, who's a longtime Sports Illustrated, incredible writer.
A legend, yeah.
Yes, he's a legend. And he wrote the cover story in 1996 when Sports Illustrated was naming Tiger Sportsman of the Year.
The moment when it became compelling for me is the moment I started the story off with. This is the moment when his father walks in front of that microphone at the Fred Haskins dinner Earl Woods stands up and starts laying out this vision for his son.
My heart fills with so much joy when I realize that this young man is going to be able to help so many people.
And he really declares that, you know, his son is going to transcend the game of golf and bring a level of humanitarianism the world has never seen. How would he impact America and how would America view him? And that was just, I mean, huge expectations right from the start. He had won 3 consecutive amateur championships, 3 consecutive junior championships before that. But I think there was still some skepticism as to whether that would translate on the professional tour, the PGA Tour level. And of course, I mean, within a year, we know that it did.
So this story is about Tiger. It's also very clearly about almost everything else. It's about culture and history, inclusion, exclusion, exclusivity in this sport. And you end up spending time in the film, quality time, with a golf group called the Pittsburgh Duffers.
I hope you guys got a wide lens because he's not going to be nowhere down the fairway. Bet you guys $100 he don't hit the fairway. See what I tell you?
Bang!
What I tell you?
Bang!
That's why I beat him.
Who are the Pittsburgh Duffers and what did they tell you?
They really represented the barriers that were in golf, you know, in the 50s and 60s, pre-civil rights.
The group was really started out of necessity because they had difficulty finding places to play in the 50s where, as African Americans, they could be accepted onto the course. And
I walked with them as they played a round of golf and talked with them after the round. They expressed that there was strength in numbers at that time, that when they would want to host tournaments, if they could get a group together, they had a much better chance of being accepted. It just, I don't know, it encapsulated really how long golf had been an exclusive sport of privilege and kind of this last bastion of, you know, in some ways, segregation in America.
It's like a lot of things. I mean, a lot of things, you know. It's just rough. It's just rough. This game was hard to break into. And when you break into it, it's still hard.
When did you know in the filmmaking process that you wanted to find a group of people like the Duffers that were not in the main pro golf spotlight, but clearly essential to the kind of story you wanted to tell?
So it started with my understanding that for African Americans before 1961, really the way that these men could get close to the game of golf was as caddies. Mm. I also learned about, you know, the history of Augusta National for many years, really until 1983, the caddies were African American. And there was a whole neighborhood, the Sand Hill neighborhood. It was the product of Jim Crow. It was a segregated neighborhood 2 miles from the course. I spent some time speaking with 3 retired caddies, Tommy Bennett, Jeriah Beard, and Otis Moore. And they talked, you know, about just, you know, being excluded from a game that they loved to play, but never could play at the mainstream level. So that was really where I knew that that history is the context that needed to surround Tiger's win in 97.
And so when we get to 97, Lauren, and we get to Tiger Woods winning the Masters at Augusta in that way, how aware was Tiger of all that history and all that experience of exclusion?
He was very aware. We show that in the film because when he gets into Butler Cabin and the first question that Jim Nance asks him.
You're the first African-American to ever win the Masters or a Grand Slam event, the first Asian-American. What does all of this mean to you?
And his immediate response was that he was not the first.
Obviously, I'm the first, but I wasn't the pioneer. Charlie Sifford, Lee Elder, Teddy Rhodes, you know, those guys are the ones who paved the way in order for me to be here.
It said a lot about not only his reverence for, you know, these men who paved the way for him, but also of a deep understanding. You know, Tommy Bennett caddied for Tiger, and we interviewed Tommy, and he told the story of his mom, his dad, Tiger, driving through the Sand Hill neighborhood.
Tiger and I met the retired caddies of Augusta, and he promised them that he was going to win this tournament someday.
Something that I never knew. I don't know how many people were aware of that aspect of his journey, you know, to Augusta in 97, and how he took the time, you know, to connect that history.
In the film, you focus on Tiger's approach to the 18th green at the end of the 97 Masters and the celebration after. But another aspect that I wasn't quite as aware of, Lauren, was the perspective of the employees at Augusta National and how they reacted to the history Tiger was making.
So yeah, Pete McDaniel, who's a longtime Golf Digest writer, described it so vividly.
At Augusta National, you have all of these black faces, the workers, the groundskeepers, and they're all lined on the balcony, watching him come up 18. My heart just swelled, but it meant more, I think, to those people who were lining that balcony because they had seen nothing but white faces holding up that trophy.
You also hear, you know, Tiger's father, Earl, you know, share the same memory of the kitchen workers after the champions dinner.
We all walked in and all the members are standing and applauding. And I looked around because I wanted to take this in, and every doorway leading to the kitchen was filled with black faces. They were a part of it too.
It meant so much because of the venue and just what the Deep South represented, and to think of the years and years of exclusion and segregation and Jim Crow, to see a young man of color dominate in the way that he did, you know, it had much deeper meaning to so many people.
All right, coming up, how Tiger went from a hero as the first black champion at the Masters to this lightning rod on race.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, less than 2 weeks after he wins the Masters in that triumphant fashion, Tiger goes onto the Oprah Winfrey Show, which is the television show of all television shows. And what happens?
Yeah, so 11 days after he won the Masters, he, you know, appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Of course, you've received all kinds of adulation. You also get hate mail. I hear you insist upon reading it. Why?
Yep. Well, it reminds me of what I have to try and do.
And he goes on that stage and, you know, she points out that he has a rich, you know, cultural, racial heritage.
Your father's half black, quarter Chinese, quarter American Indian, mother's half Thai, quarter Chinese and quarter white. So you are, that's why you are America's son.
Yeah.
You are.
And in response to that, Tiger says that he came up with a name for himself.
A little funny thing is, growing up, I came up with his name. I'm a Coblin Asian.
A Coblin Asian.
Caucasian, blue, black, Indian, Asian. Coblin Asian.
That's what you call yourself?
Yeah.
And, you know, the reaction to that not necessarily on the stage that day, but what transpired following those comments. And frankly, for the 20 years, 20 plus years since he made that statement, it really has been contested, debated, scrutinized, criticized. It resonated beyond just that day. I think what we learned is there was more to that interview where he did explain the origin of, you know, his feelings about his identity and knowing that he didn't want to, you know, leave his mother out of that conversation.
And I want to bring your personal background here into this, if I can, Lauren, because you are biracial yourself. And I'm curious, when you set about documenting the particular backlash that Tiger received over identifying as multiracial in the way that he did and not strictly Black, what did you think? How did this resonate with you and your own personal experience?
It resonated in a way that I felt like I could understand kind of the quandary that he found himself in. Mm. And so I think it's interesting because when you're in that position, you know how you're perceived. And that's, again, measured by the pigment in your skin and the melanin in your skin. And so I know that I'm perceived as a Black woman. I also know that I'm proud as a Black woman, but I also know that I'm Irish and Italian and I was raised by my father most of my life. And so I can't deny that part of my experience and my family and what makes me uniquely who I am. What I tried to do is, you know, not judge the statements that Tiger made. I mean, as of course, as a, you know, as a documentarian, you wouldn't want to judge anyway. But I think it did make me hopefully a little more sensitive to think about my own experience and how multifaceted it is when you talk about issues of identity and race.
It is palpable how much Tiger means, Lauren, as a Black public figure. And that's not least because of all the very targeted exclusion from the institution of golf itself. But also, and this is where I bring my own personal experience into this, my family's from the Philippines, and Asian Americans don't often get to see ourselves in sports or on screen in general. So I was glad also to see Tiger's mom, Kultita, who is from Thailand, in the documentary because she doesn't tend to be a super visible part of his story.
I've been taught him since he was young, your heritage and where you come from. So he know who he is, and those people don't accept that their problem.
It was challenging even to find interviews with her. I mean, she did one interview with Outside the Lines in 1997, the one that you see in the film. And it was fascinating to know that those were the values that she instilled in Tiger. You know, she lived this and he lived it. I mean, it was hugely important for us to present that. Tita is a figure that is, you know, as much a part of his story as Earl was.
So you don't want to deny your mother's heritage?
No, I'm not going to deny my mom's heritage. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to deny my father's heritage. Those are the two I was raised under, and those are the only two things I know.
And it also seems important to point out that when it comes to claiming someone as a particular ethnicity, I mean, it does feel so often like this zero-sum game. And you referenced this in the movie with the Chappelle Show sketch, which is so famous, the racial draft, where it's like, well, if you guys have them, we can't. And so for me, Lauren, I'll be perfectly honest here too. I have proudly claimed Tiger as Asian. But at the same time, it's also so important to point out that the way race in America works, it really does not feel up to the person themselves to say, actually, I am X, Y, and Z. Because to me, it feels more like, as you make clear in the film, it's up to everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's what I realize is that it's telling us more about ourselves almost than it is about Tiger. The fact that we are, you know, as Americans, we almost don't even see ourselves as Americans, right? I think it, you know, we within that we have groups, and then within that, what does it mean to be authentically Black?
Mm. So where have we landed at this point? If we have in fact landed, Lauren, on anything here, how much responsibility does Tiger have to black people in America?
You know, that's a difficult question to answer, because I think without speaking to him directly about it, without a greater understanding of what he believes and where he stands, all we can do is kind of react to any bit of information that we can glean from, again, an Instagram post or, you know, the George Floyd statement.
This from Tiger Woods. My heart goes out to George Floyd, his loved ones, and all of us who are hurting right now. I've always had the utmost respect for our law enforcement. They trained so diligently to understand how, when, and where to use force. This shocking tragedy clearly crossed that line.
Which happened actually while we were getting close to finalizing the piece. And what was important was that the reaction to it was the same reaction to his comments 20 years earlier on Oprah. I mean, it was, you have disowned us. We know you're not with us. You said you were Kablan Asian. You don't care about black people. Those were the comments that we presented in the piece through Instagram. The comments that were actually directed to Tiger from everyday average people. And, you know, what we also looked at, which I, again, I thought was interesting, because for 20 years, Tiger has had, you know, his foundation, which is primarily in underserved, underprivileged communities with minority kids and STEM. So like for me, it's hard because I look at that too and I say, well, that's important for us to point out as well. I think that we tried the best we could to present as many sides of it and explore as many sides of it as we could.
Let's get into Tiger's impact on a new generation of golfers in just a moment. So it is undeniable, it feels like now, 20 years, more than 20 years after Tiger's win at Augusta National in 97, that he has had an impact on the way an entire generation of golfers view their place in that sport. And one of the people who clearly feels that way is in your film, and her name is Tiana Jones. Who is she, and how did you find her?
I found Tiana actually through Scott Van Pelt. He had done a symposium at the University of Maryland, and it was about the effect of Tiger on the next wave of young, diverse golfers in America. And as part of that, you know, the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, which is a historically Black university, they have the only PGA golf management program at a historically Black college, in HBCU. Tiana at that time was a senior at UMES, and you know, she's a five-time PGA minority collegiate champion. She's just an incredible, you know, talent, but really her goal was to be part of the PGA of America. And today she is a member of the PGA of America, and she's one of seven Black women who are members. You know, she idolized Tiger and modeled her, you know, game after him. And, you know, we just thought it was important to illuminate someone who was impacted, who maybe didn't go on to the LPGA, but who is invested in the fabric of the PGA, the tour, and you know, the PGA of America.
And how did Tiana describe in specific how she modeled herself after Tiger? How did she see Tiger paving the path for her?
So it was through her father. He said, I used to see Tiger. I saw Tiger on television when he was a little boy.
Tiger was a little kid hitting the ball. Bam, bam, bam. I said, I'm going to do my older daughter just like Mr. Woods did his son.
So her dad, you know, saw Tiger on the Mike Douglas show, you know, in the 70s, and he was going to get his daughter into golf.
My dad set me in a high chair when I was a baby, and he said my face used to light up every time he would hit the golf ball. And so he knew from that point that I wanted to play golf. And here I am.
In her house, It's incredible. She has on the mantle all of her trophies, and she's got, like, you know, family photos, and there's a picture of her as a baby. And next to the picture of her as a baby is a framed picture of Tiger Woods. I saw that and I'm like, he's part of your family. And she's like, oh yeah. I mean, Tiger is, he's on the mantle. And she said in the piece, in the film, that she doesn't feel that he owes anything, you know, to her to get her to the next level in golf.
His presence, being there, representing and showing that he has not only the skill, the talent, but who he is as a person, speaks loud enough. So why is it that Tiger has to say something for a movement to change? That's not really what the problem is.
And so I think identifying that problem, you know, we didn't explore that in this film, but certainly a fascinating topic for future work.
What's been the biggest surprise for you, Lauren, as you set out to do all this reporting and interviewing? What did you come away with that you didn't expect to?
I came away with, like, I would say, an appreciation and an understanding of a moment in history that I didn't understand the layers to until doing this film. You know, the manager of Augusta Municipal Golf Course, Ira, I remember when I asked him where he was in 1997, and he was overseas serving in the military, and he remembers watching it. And as he was telling me this, this is, you know, a man who is in tears as he's telling me about remembering the significance of what it meant to see Tiger win. He said, there were only two times in my life that I have ever been more proud. And it was when Tiger won the Masters in 1997 and when President Obama was inaugurated. And that, just to me, again, it became bigger than the moment. It became something that really has impacted people's lives.
Lauren Stoll, thank you for digging through all those layers of this moment with us today.
Thank you so much, Pablo, for having me on.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.